High school action to the birds and the pros with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion. WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
And we are live from the basement of Fell Hall, as Leo Stoddard would say. Welcome to the show that never ends. Joe Kennedy here with Nick Levy, who's joining me tonight, as Joey and Leo are all the way out in Iowa City, and they will be calling in. But, Nick, we're happy to have you on here today.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. You know, I get to always kick off the week with New Music Monday, but I'm excited to finally come on The Zone. I feel like it's been a long time coming.
And kind of end the week off on The Zone, too. Thursday night, a lot going on in sports right now. We've been watching March Madness nonstop all day in the studio. A bunch of big games right now. Kentucky trailing against St. Peter's as a 2 seed right now by 3 points with a minute left. And a lot of sports is just going on, including the Redbird Athletics, where they just pulled off a big win against Purdue. And that game, it was a close one, just went in the extra innings, super long, but a big victory for ISU to end Purdue's winning streak of 13 games.
Yeah, I was going to say, wow, what a way to end it, too. You know, the Redbirds put up early, but we were hoping for it to end a little bit earlier, but, you know, nothing quite like extra innings finish to end the streak for Purdue.
And so it was a big four-game series. They got today's game where the Birds just pulled off the victory. And then tomorrow, hopefully they'll play in a game. I mean, we'll see. Yeah. It's going to be raining all day long.
It's going to be a rainy day, bud. You know, you got to get those showers in, so bring Mayflowers. But I don't know, but I'm excited to see that. You know, putting up big game, first game. Hopefully we get a good series. You know, they did that with Arkansas and everything, but unfortunately dropped the series.
Second win over a ranked opponent now for ISU, and both of those games come in the first game of their series. And so looking at today's game, the Birds were without Ryan Cermak, one of their best players, arguably, for the ISU Redbirds. And then starting pitcher, though, Dylan Salazzo went 7 innings today, allowing just 1 hit with 4 strikeouts.
I was going to say, was it 4 or was it 5 strikes?
4 or 5.
I want to say he put up 5 K's in this game, dude. Okay.
But he showed great poise out there, and Mikey and David were all over the call today. Had a great call. But it was a big scare out in the 9th inning where Kubatuiks, sorry if I pronounced that wrong, but he gave up 2 hits in the top of the 9th as the Birds were up 3-1 and a walk to load the bases, so Purdue would eventually go on to tie that. But, I mean, great showing from the Redbirds today, and a lot of good storylines, too, that have come out through the baseball program, including, like, third-year freshman Terry Krause. He made his debut for the Redbirds about 2 weeks ago now after battling a long 11-month battle with Ewing's sarcoma. So great to see him back on the mound, and good move for the Redbird baseball program right now.
Absolutely. And, you know, I heard Mikey and David talking earlier that one of the Purdue broadcasters said, even though Purdue was undefeated, they had never really been going up against ranked competition that much. So maybe it's a sign that Redbirds should be ranked. You know, it might be a bold take, but after putting up a win against number 2 Arkansas, and now what was it, number 19 Purdue. Like,
the record right now maybe doesn't stand. They got some losses against some other teams that are right around them, but from looking at their conference record, or excuse me, their non-conference record, the teams that they play up against, I mean, Western Carolina, they're one of their top programs in their conference. Arkansas State, and then Murray State, that's an interesting one. I mean, we haven't even talked about the Murray State game. We went into 16 innings. The Redbirds put up 23 strikeouts, the most ever in an MVC game. So, like, their pitching staff coming into the year was a big question mark. And right now, it's looking like their pitching staff has done a terrific job. I mean, coming off a record-breaking performance just under about a week ago. And then today,
with Salada
going for 7 and giving up just about no runs. and we could say it now, he had a perfect game going into that sixth inning or seventh inning, and I guess it just kind of went away.
You know, Joe, we were watching it, and I'm like, wow, we're going six, we're going seven. I was like, oh my gosh, he's going to do it, and then unfortunately it blew it, but... You know, you never want to call it like that so soon.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want to be a Joe
Buck. You don't want to, yeah.
Yeah, you want to do a Joe Buck.
Mikey Fornelli on the call, though, today did say he was taking part of Len Casper saying how Len Casper always talks about when there is a no-hitter going on. I mean, you can say it.
Yeah.
Believe what you want. Maybe there is a jinx, a pitch, or announcer's jinx, but I don't know.
Yeah, you know, being a diehard Cubby fan, you got to believe in the superstition with baseball sometimes, but you're absolutely right about Casper.
But from this baseball team, I mean, Kyle Soberano, he had a big hit in the ninth inning, and that really put the Birds ahead and gave them a chance to win this game. The one that got the lead up to 3-1, extended that, but then obviously the pitching breakdown in the ninth. And then going into the 11th inning, though, the Redbirds got a couple men on base. They eventually loaded up the bases, and they were able to pull out the victory in a good opening series.
Yeah, and not only did the Redbirds do this, but I saw that they broke Smoltz's – apologize if I'm word jumble. but they broke his hit record, I believe. I think they put up around like six or seven hits against Smeltz. And so it was really big to see that for the Redbirds to put up against a pitcher like him.
Yeah, like Purdue's a very good team, and the Redbirds, this is their first look they're getting at a Big Ten team. They play, I believe, Purdue, Iowa, and Illinois, all in the Big Ten. So a bunch of big-time names that the Birds are playing on their schedule. And this non-conference schedule, we talked to Coach Holm last year on the Red Zone. He came on about two semesters ago, or last semester, and he was saying that they just love to schedule these high-quality opponents because it also gives them a chance to prepare for the MVC, but then it also gives you a chance to put your record or put a good resume out if you want on that large bid, possibly.
Absolutely.
When you're trying to get into the NCAA tournament at the end of the year. So it's a good thing going on, and Redbird baseball is back. I mean, it's been good to watch so far this season.
You know, not only is Redbird baseball back, but we also got the MLB back. You got the NFL back. Like, there's
so much news coming back right now.
Like, I mean, it is prime time. I remember spring break hearing the news that the lockout was over, and I was like, wow, we are about to get, like, months of news within a matter of weeks.
And also, so that's going to transition next to our next Redbird segment. We got over spring break a couple of big new head coaching announcements were put forth by the Redbird program, including Ryan Peden, who's going to be the men's basketball coach coming in from Ohio State, and then Allie Matters coming in for the volleyball program out of Wright State. We're going to start off with Peden. And so we were talking about it a little bit, but I like what they got with Peden. He has a really great resume with what he's done with players from around Ohio State and then going back to Butler in Illinois. But everyone's talking about, like, this resume that he has. When he was at Illinois, that Illinois team was not good. It was under John Gross, who did not succeed at all really there. But when he went to Butler with Chris Holtman, that's kind of where I feel like he started to pick up his pace as a coach and such like that. But I just thought there was a couple more candidates possibly that the Birds could have gotten.
Absolutely. Although we do have to bring in the big name, Brad Stevens from the Boston Celtics.
Up,
you know,
right?
Yeah. Well, when he was with Butler and everything, so he got to see Peden early on, and he said he's known Ryan for like 20 years, absolutely love his coaching style, his enthusiasm. Heard from multiple players in the past that the coach just, he loves his players even off the court, and that's something really important, I think, to keep in mind. I know there was some big candidates and some big resumes on the court, but I'm definitely interested to see what like Peden can bring to the Redbirds.
And it was interesting, Kyle Brennan was going through candidates and everything, and then Ryan Peden's name came out, and at first he kind of put his name to the side thinking that maybe Peden's not going to be looking for Illinois State job. Like, they were expecting that Peden would be trying to go to a high level Power 5 job, and so Kyle Brennan eventually started to talk to him, and Peden just kind of fell in love with the campus, saying how much history there is here, and just the a big thing he was talking about was the 200-mile radius of recruiting, and that's something Dan Mueller really struggled with, was trying to recruit guys inside that 200-mile radius. I mean, looking back at it, you got a couple of guys from Batavia, Johnson, and then obviously Antonio Reeves, probably the best recruit they've had, but he hasn't really had, or Dan Mullen never really was recruiting well inside the state.
Absolutely. You know, we see a lot of big names coming from outside of the state. But in that 200 mile radius,
it's important because there's so many good, especially out of Bloomington Normal. Like, you see guys going off, like this year, a guy in Normal Community right now, he's going to Liberty to go play. And, like, that's a guy that should be coming to Illinois State.
Absolutely.
They're guys that are leaving to go to, like, mid-major programs that are good or just around ISU's level, and the Redbirds are just missing out on their chances. But hopefully Ryan Peden can emphasize in that local recruiting level area, and I think that'd be a great spot for the Redbirds.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have to do talk about Peden being under Ohio State with the Buckeyes. He's with them right now, potentially for a controversial match. Not even controversial, but a big matchup for this first round. And they went 87-44 within his 4 years at Ohio State, and he reached the second round in the NCAA tournament twice in 2018, 2019. Something I would love to see the Birds get back into.
Yeah, and it's funny to, like, look at this matchup because Ohio State's going up against Loyola Chicago tomorrow morning, I believe, or tomorrow afternoon. And that's, like, a funny little thing to be for Peden looking at an MVC team, but Loyola's also leaving the conference.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe he's not getting a great look inside the Missouri Valley, but maybe just a style of play and everything. I just think it's kind of funny those two things kind of mesh into together.
You see his current, well, his now former division going up against the Valley and everything, and who knows, maybe it gives him a sign like, hey, these guys were dominating the Valley. This is what we need to bring to the Redbirds to escalate to that level, because if we're being real, Loyola's been dominating the Valley for the past couple of years, and we need to see these Birds get back on that playing field.
Yeah, and going back to, like, some other guys that the Redbirds were looking at, the number one name that everyone was kind of talking about was Roger Powell Jr., the Gonzaga assistant. He's an Illinois native, played for the Fighting Illini when they went to those Final Four, or that Final Four run and championship run, and that was a guy a lot of people were looking out towards, and I kind of was too. I'm sure they, I mean, we don't know what really happened inside those conversations, but Kyle Brennan, the athletic director here at ISU, kind of just fell in love with Peden right away when he was talking about him at the introductory press conference. So, I mean, hopefully it all works out well.
Absolutely. I'm definitely optimistic to see it. You know, like, we have to just wait out and see how
that's
this
all you
first
could do.
Seasons,
I mean,
really,
especially at a mid-major level, you're not going to get a guy that's very well known at the collegiate level. I mean, a lot of people know, like, the people who really follow college basketball, college hoops, inside and out, they know who Ryan Peden is, but the casual fan, like, they don't know who that is, especially like Redbird fans. We're all just trying to get to know him right now.
And, you know, even for the casual fans listening, like, you hear that Ohio State name, it's virtually known across the board, even if you're not a basketball
the
fan.
Ohio State. That's, like, you know, thing. Like, everyone makes fun of him for that.
Exactly. Like, my brother went to Michigan State, and, you know, you'd think the Michigan State-Michigan rivalry is bad. The Ohio State fans are some of the worst to deal with.
Yeah, but a lot of craziness is going on.
Yeah.
And right now, we just got to inform everyone listening, St. Peter's, the 15th seed, just knocked off Kentucky in overtime, and a big, big win right there. So, I mean, we've been watching that. So, a lot of craziness.
It's truly March Madness. You know, we see Iowa dropping and what it dropped to, like, what, 3% of perfect brackets. So. Oh,
and it's now probably
it's
below
gone.
1%. Yeah.
It's got to be down below 2 now.
And we're going to be talking in with Joey and Leo at the end of the show, coming up probably around 9:15. They'll come in from live from Iowa City to discuss some Redbird women hoops. But before we get then, we're going to also have Kristen Gillespie come on in a little bit, and she will talk on about the Redbirds' upcoming games and their run in the MVC tournament. But before we get there, let's just touch in on Allie Matters being named as the ISU new volleyball coach. I love this hire, just based on her resume that she has at Wright State.
Absolutely. You know, sorry, Joe.
No, you're good.
But you got Leah Johnson leaving, and that's a big hole for the Redbirds and everything. But, you know, when you're looking at the candidates, that's probably one of the best options to fill that spot.
Oh, easily.
Especially with Allie Matters, the massive success she's had with Wright State, you know.
Yeah.
We see her taking them to the NCAA tournament, I believe, twice as well. Get in that.
Coach of the year this
year.
She was the
coach
of the year conference. And, like, that's how much it proves how good of a program here we have at Illinois State inside the volleyball program. Because you go from another mid-major to another, obviously, higher quality. And, like, you don't see that a lot in other sports where a coach goes from a head coach at a mid-major program to another head coach at another. So it just shows how much he praised Illinois State.
Absolutely. And it's just, I'm really excited to see what Matters could do with this Redbird volleyball team, because clearly Johnson's leaving a legacy with this volleyball team. And, you know, you got Allie Matters coming in ready to just continue that excellence.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see, because you got Aaliyah Moore, who already left tomorrow, today already left. And so there's still Katie Weimer-Skirch, Sarah Kushner. They still got their seniors still coming back for next year. So that's good. And it's going to be interesting to see how they mix those relationships back up and everything.
Absolutely. Really excited to see that.
But coming up next, we're going to have Kristen Gillespie join the show to talk about the upcoming matchup with the Iowa Hawkeyes tomorrow. That's live on ESPN. Yeah, we have that coming up next here on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. Leo Stoddard, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kennedy with you now. And our next guest is Illinois State Women's Basketball Head Coach Kristen Gillespie. Coach is getting set to take on the Hawkeyes in the NCAA tournament. Coach, I guess for the first question is, have you had time to even take in this moment, or are you already on to Iowa next after this quick turnaround from Sunday's game to now preparing for the next game?
Yeah, we enjoyed it. You know, today has been about Iowa, but last night, you know, after we got off the bus and had the selection show at Redbird, you know, I told everyone in our program, you know, just enjoy this moment. You know, sometimes these are once in a lifetime. I know there's a lot of coaches out there that have never had the opportunity to play, you know, coach in an NCAA tournament game, and a lot of players that never get this opportunity. So, you know, I never want the urgent to get in the way of the important. And I think it's so important that we celebrate this. I remember 5 years ago, we celebrated every time we won a game. So this should be no different. This is a big game that we won, but today our focus has been on Iowa, but we're still, you know, you still have to pinch me every now and then, like, holy cow, this is really happening.
And you said a lot of players don't get the opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament. You did, and you went pretty far in your playing career. Has that helped you prepare the team at all for what's coming up this Friday?
Yeah, you know, we haven't talked about it a ton. You know, I think I might share some stories. You know, they'll probably roll their eyes like, yeah, coach, that was how many years ago or whatnot. But, you know, our focus this past week was just staying in that moment. You know, I told our players, you know, March has the ability to make a lot of dreams come true. And if we just stayed in the moment, you know, of just how do we make that next play? You know, don't get too high, don't get too low. And I think our team did an unbelievable job of embodying that over the weekend. But, you know, I can give them some of my stories, but I think, you know, it's changed so much. I can't wait to see their faces as they experience this. I don't think there's a better thing for a coach just to see the joy through your players' eyes.
You're talking about these players. What does it mean for you as a coach to make it to the tournament with this group that is entirely your recruits?
It's awesome. You know, this is what we sold every one of those girls in our locker room on. You know, you come to Illinois State and we'll have a chance to win the Valley and go to the NCAA tournament. And, you know, a lot of the players were our first real recruiting class, and we weren't very good. And we sold them a pipe dream. And it's really cool, like, to see Kale Newland and Lexi Kadelka, Mary Crompton, you know, that they were our first big recruiting class. And to see those kids get to climb the ladder and cut down those nets, I mean, I remember having these conversations in their living room with their parents, and to see it, you know, come full circle was awesome.
And this is your first time taking this group to the NCAA tournament, but last year you had the experience of getting to play in the WNIT. How did that experience of just playing in a postseason tournament in March maybe prepare your squad for this year?
I think it was a springboard. You know, I think it was that next step. You know, I will still always believe in 2020. I really liked our team that year, and I thought we had a great chance. So that one always kind of nagged at me. Like, was that going to be our shot? Like, the what ifs, like, you know, but I thought we responded last year, and it was awesome. What a great experience to get to postseason play. But, you know, all the returners in that locker room, they said, as great as that was, it's not good enough. And they had higher goals. You know, we don't talk a ton about long-term goals in our program. It's more short-term, like what do we need to do? We know what we want to do at the end. Of course, we want to win our league. We want to play in the NCAA tournament. But how does that look day in and day out? And this team just, you know, embodied that every single day.
And after you guys won, and even throughout Hoops in the Heartland this past weekend, you talked a lot about the belief. That was a big word, the belief that the players had in the program and that you guys had in the fact that you were going to be able to win. And when you were on that skid towards the end of the season, how much did that belief in the program help you guys rebound heading into the tournament?
That was quite the skid. Yeah, thank goodness for that belief. It was tough, and we knew when we got our conference schedule back in, I don't know, October, our staff was like, man, this is going to be a tough 2 weeks. Like, we got to figure out how to survive this. And, you know, we didn't. But I think looking back, I think everything happens for a reason. And at times you may not know why, but I think going through those 2 weeks really helped us dig a little bit deeper and have, you know, look each other in the eyes and say, hey, we're going to be okay. And that belief, Juju was amazing in our locker room of just keeping that. She has such a belief in our staff and what we're trying to do and her teammates. You know, I don't know if we win this weekend if we don't go through that. I know that sounds crazy because they were two miserable weeks of everyone's lives. But, you know, it gave us a chance to really kind of dig our heels in and say, hey, who are we? What is our character of our team? And I love the way we responded.
And, Coach, so in Hoops in the Heartland, you had 3 games in 3 days. I'm always interested to see how coaches handle that. So how was it adjusting and scouting to play teams in under 24 hours?
Yeah, most of the work was done prior to going to Hoops in the Heartland. I have an amazing staff. You know, I have 3 of the best assistant coaches in the country and then our support staff. You know, we have a group of 4, 3 guys and Stephanie, our director of basketball ops, who just pour everything they have into our program. So we had it all divided up, you know, different scenarios. So we were pretty much prepared. Who are we going to play? But then it's just that quick of getting our team. Hey, we have to keep it really simple. There's not a ton you can do, you know, because you're really not practicing. It's a walkthrough on the court for, you know, 30 minutes or so. It was just, but it goes back to that belief and understanding, you know, what is the foundation of your program? What are your defensive principles? Because if you're trying to change things up in March, it's not going to go well. So our players knew this is what we had to do. And this is, you know, we'd make a little tweak here and there, but, you know, our staff did all, not me, our staff, they did all the work leading up. They deserve all the credit.
And then just talking about some of the teams in the Valley this year, it was the first time there was ever a matchup between the 3 and the 4 seed in the championship game. Did the Valley being so deep really help prepare your team for the national tournament now that you've just been in a dogfight all season for that championship crown?
Yeah, I think I know I'm a little biased, but I think the Valley is the best mid-major conference in women's basketball. I mean, even the bottom teams have gotten better this year, and it's just there's no easy game. There's no game you can start going like, oh, we get to take a break this weekend. But, you know, you're just put through the ringer, especially down the stretch for us to have to go. You know, we played Missouri State, Southern, Drake, and UNI in a 2-week stretch right before, you know, 10 days before the conference tournament. So that almost, if you think about it, those silver linings, those games were really fresh in our minds. The scouts were really fresh. We just tweaked a couple of things, and we got beat. So our players were a little pissed off about that too. So it was like, okay, you know, we played with a little bit more edge. You know, we had a little chip on our shoulder. But yeah, the Valley, I mean, it's tough.
And when you were at Hoops in the Heartland, was there a defining moment or one of the moments within the 3 games where you kind of knew that you guys were going to win? Because there were a lot of super cool moments being on press row. Like when Mary Crompton hit the 3 towards the end of the Panthers game or Deanna Wilson's free throws, there were so many incredible moments. Was there one where you kind of realized that things were falling into place and the team really knew that they were going to win?
Yeah, as crazy as this sounds, after we beat Loyola, I thought if we can get past the first game, because I think sometimes the first game is the hardest game to get past. As you saw last year, we get beat at the buzzer by Loyola, but I really believe that if we could get past Friday, we were going to be okay. And I think our team believed that too, but you're right. There's so many great moments and I don't know. I haven't slept. So I can't even think of them all right now, but you know, I thought Mayer hits 2 big threes. She hit a huge 3 at Southern. I mean, her only basket yesterday, it was a huge shot. We called a play for her, and I was worried that she wasn't going to get open. I knew if she got open, she was going to make the shot. You know, and then, Juju, holy smokes. I mean, and then Kate Bowman's defense. Like, there's just, I don't know how much time we have. I'll talk about this all day. I don't want to bore you guys, but yeah. But I just honestly, I knew once we beat Loyola, I really believed we were going to win.
And so, Coach, everyone's gone through the conference tournament now, but now you're facing something that you guys haven't faced, and you're going to NCAA tournament, a completely different level, and the University of Iowa is also a pretty high level in college basketball right now. So how are you going to – or what are you going to tell the players to, like, kind of control their emotions and just keep a good style of play out there on the court?
I think it honestly, our message doesn't change. Just stay in the moment. I mean, but here's the thing. I want our players to enjoy every second of this. You know, none of them have done this. So we are going to Iowa to win. That is our preparation. But I don't want that to be the sole focus, that they're so nervous, so worried. I want them to enjoy police escorts and all the fun things that come, you know, along with making the NCAA tournament. But, you know, I think if we just stay in the moment, you know, don't get too high. You know, if we come out and we start well, let's not like, hey, this is awesome and this is good enough. Or if we come out and Caitlin Clark hits two, you know, 40 footers in her eye, hey, it's okay. We got to find a way to score, you know, or to get a stop. And I think that's what our team has really excelled at these past couple weeks, of just staying in that moment.
And talking a little bit about the Hawkeyes, Caitlin Clark, kind of a viral sensation this year, one of the top players in the nation. Have you ever faced anyone like her as a coach? And what do you do in practice to scheme against that?
No, I have never faced a player like that. I'll tell you what, our scout team, I think the guys are fighting over who gets to be Caitlin Clark right now. Because they all want to just, you know, no one, you know, they just want to cross half court and fire up shots. And you know, so we'll prepare as best as we can. You know, it's going to be a team defense. I mean, for us to have success, it's not a one-on-one matchup. They have an outstanding post player, too, who's just, I mean, we're going to have our hands full with her, too. So, you know, our staff, I think we have a pretty good game plan. We took today off. Our players definitely needed a day off. And so we'll get after it tomorrow.
And you mentioned Monica Zizzano. I was doing research for this interview, and in my notes I wrote, Monica Zizzano, how the hell do you guard her? Because in the Big Ten Championship, she was incredible in the post. But at Hoops in the Heartland, your team played easily the best defense we've probably seen in the Valley all season long. Is there any adjustments that you're going to make, or are you going to kind of ride with what Deanna Wilson and Kate Bowman were doing at Hoops?
Yeah, we're going to have to make a few adjustments because we haven't seen a post player like her all year. You know, you're right. I had similar thoughts. I was like, oh, hell, geez, this is okay. But, you know, same thing with Caitlin Clark. But I think our players are going to be up for the challenge. You know, why not? Like we talked about, no one in America thinks we're going to go to Iowa City and win. So, all right. So let's just go and you know, show the – we get to play on ESPN. How cool is that? Juju probably thinks it's because of her. Maybe it's because Peyton Clark. I don't know. You know, heck, let's just go compete. You know, I know we're going to be prepared. We have a really good game plan. Is it going to be good enough? We'll see at 3:00 on Friday, but I know we're going to go in and make the most of it.
And Coach, Mary Crompton had just the one attempt and one shot making. It was a huge one on Sunday. Do you think you guys will have to get her open coming up on Friday in order to get something going?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting though, because the unique thing, if you look at like non-conference like stats, Mary got a lot more open looks, and it's just, I think in conference play, you're so scouted and everyone knows each other so well. I know Iowa's going to scout extremely well, but I also know we have about 100 sets, and that's not an exaggeration. So, you know, we're going to do our best to try to manipulate some. I know they play zone a little bit, so usually teams that play zone, Mary can get a few shots off. We can do some things. But, yeah, she's going to have to shoot the ball well for us to you know, have a chance.
And, Coach, some more players that obviously need to get some buckets. Juju Redmond was incredible at Hoops. Are you scheming any more behind-the-back shots for Juju in the post?
No. She might want to throw some on Iowa. Oh, my God, that kid. What in the world was that, you know? But that's Juju. She's going to – might be, you know, I'm going to be cheering for one moment and wanting to pull my hair out the next. But when you play at that level she does and you're as good as she is, I'll live with some of her crazy shots. But, no, let's let's hope they're a little bit more traditional.
And we had Juju on the show a few weeks back, and she talks about how she just feeds off of being the underdog. And that kind of worked for your team going into Hoops, being the underdog, the four seed on a little bit of a skid, going into Iowa City as maybe one of the bigger underdogs in the nation. Is that something your team kind of relishes, the opportunity to get to just prove everybody wrong?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, we don't care. I can tell you those 14 players in our locker room don't care what seed Iowa is or who they have. Number one, they're so excited that we're in the NCAA tournament. Hasn't happened in a really long time for our program. And number two, like I said, we're going to be on ESPN, sellout crowd. Like, how awesome is that? I mean, I think they sold out at 9 a.m. this morning. I mean, what a cool environment to go and just lay it all on the line.
And Coach, last question for you. It has been an incredible season. There's been ups and downs. Hoops was awesome. You guys are headed to the tournament. Is there an overarching theme or just a thought that you have to kind of encapsulate the whole season?
Wow. This team is different than any team I've coached at Illinois State. I just think the love that they have for another and the belief they have in one another, it sets them apart. And I think that's why we were able to accomplish what we did this past weekend. You know, I don't know if this is our most talented team, but this is the team that is the most close-knit. They have all the intangibles, and that's what you need. That's what you need, to win in March. And they will forever be maybe my favorite team, if not one of them, not because we're in the tournament, just because how much fun I've had coaching them.
Thank you very much for your time, Coach. We wish you and the team the best luck against Iowa on Friday. It's certainly a pleasure to cover the team so far. So thank you again for taking the time to do this in a very busy week for you and your team.
And that was head coach Kristen Gillespie talking on about the ISU matchup tomorrow against Iowa. But coming up after the break, we have Joey Dwyer and Leo Stoddaher tuning in live from the hotel in Iowa City, where they're going to have a couple stories to tell us and talk about their trip out there. So don't want to miss that coming up next.
I'm Dan Muller, basketball coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, and you're listening to The Red Zone only on 1033 WZND.
And that was former Redbird basketball coach Dan Muller bumping us up back into now talk about some women's hoops as Joey Dwyer and Leo Stoddaher are tuning in live from Iowa City. Leo and Joey, how you guys doing out there?
We're doing great, guys. Thanks a lot for having us on.
I mean, of course we're going to have you on. I mean, yeah, you got to talk some hoops now. Come on now.
Yeah, it's been an absolutely great day so far here in Iowa City. I'm very excited to call the game tomorrow and be able to, just take it in. The NCAA tournament, it's been a great experience so far. So
awesome.
It's going to be sweet, to say the least.
Yeah, so today, talk a little about what you guys were up to today. I know you were at the practice and then the press conference. How are the emotions going on throughout that press conference and what was being said there?
Well, I think to start things off talking about our day, I'll get started with how we got to the hotel because this really sets the tone for
tone
things.
Setter.
So paint the scene here. We're rolling up to – I can't give the location because this is classified info, and you're going to find out why in a second. We're rolling up to the hotel. Me and Joey are walking in. Eric Schweizer, our producer and director, is carrying our bags in for us because that's what Big J journalists do.
Oh, yeah. Gotta
and when Eric we walk into that. The lobby of the hotel, who's the first person we see when we walk in? It's Coach Gillespie. Now,
oh my goodness.
We see a bunch of the other players are in. And so when we tried booking the media hotel, it was all booked up. So we had to go in with another hotel, and we accidentally booked a room in the team hotel. So we're sitting here with the players, all the SIDs and stuff. So it's been a pretty fun way to get a different view of the experience, I guess. So then by the time we got to the arena for the press conference, we had kind of already seen everybody.
So did you guys get to, do some scouting report with them in their little team room in the hotel then, or get some inside scoops, or how did that work? Or nothing?
Well, unfortunately, they were pretty locked in.
Yeah,
and, we're not
going
to go up and
call.
Be like, oh, my God, we're such big fans. Because they're here to do a job, right?
Yeah.
They're here to accomplish their goal. So we're not going to fangirl. But we got to talk to Lori, the SID for basketball. So it was just like a little happy accident. But it's been fun walking around the hotel. Like, we went down to grab some Gatorades earlier from the concession stand. We were with Jasmine McGinnis-Taylor in the elevator. So, it's been a very weird mixture of, just us getting ready for the game tomorrow. And then we'll just see some of the players oh my goodness, what's up?
Yeah, so how was that press conference you guys went to, and just describe a little of how that went today for you guys?
It was cool to hear from some of the players. We heard from Juju Redmond and Mary Crompton. Obviously, this is a big week for Mary Crompton. She's from Iowa City. Mm-hmm. The team actually practiced at her high school yesterday, which is pretty cool. The house that Mary built, they practiced there. Her parents had the team over for a dinner yesterday. So it's pretty cool that they have a story like that going. While they're in a hostile environment, they have someone that's familiar with Iowa City and everything that comes with it. And then, but then getting to hear a little bit about the players, they were talking kind of like we touched about with Coach Gillespie, that she had that tournament experience. She's been telling them stories all week, and they actually got to talk to the 2008 team, the last Redbird team to go to the tournament. Wow. So it was cool to hear about how they got that experience, to get to talk to players that have done what they've done before at Illinois State, because the best way to build from the future is to learn from the past. And I think it'll be interesting to see how the Redbirds build from it. But, man, just going to the press conference and walking out down the tunnel to the arena. Carver Hawkeye Stadium is an impressive facility, and it's going to be pretty awesome to get to see this packed for some Redbird basketball tomorrow afternoon.
And awesome. I mean, a lot of stuff is going on inside that arena, especially inside that program of both basketball teams. Did you guys get to experience anything involving the Iowa men's team going down today? Any people being a little upset on your walk back home, maybe?
Down in the blues.
Or not as much noise.
Well, I mean, obviously we're at the University of Iowa right now, so we're sitting down on the concourse level, or the stadium level where you walk in, and we're getting ready for the press conference. So we're sitting there between Coach Gillespie and when Juju Redmond and Mary Crompton came out. Yeah. And so they've got like four TVs in the press conference room, and three of them have the March Madness, like the logo on it, it's a static image, but the last one in the room has the Iowa game on.
Oh, yeah.
And you could tell there were a bunch of Iowa reporters there, and every one of them, they're glued to the TV. It was hilarious.
Oh, my gosh.
It hurts for me because I had Iowa in the Final Four in my bracket, so that one is a little bit of a tough blow for me as well, but it was super weird to be there, like not really caring about the outcome of the game that much, and you see people like really getting emotional about it.
Mm-hmm. And so now let's kind of take a look at how the matchup's going to be tomorrow. I mean, Iowa, they have one of the best teams in the nation. Caitlin Clark, probably the most electric player we've seen in college basketball all this year, men's or women's. So talk a little bit about the matchup that we're going to see tomorrow with the Redbirds and Hawkeyes.
I think it's just going to be one where the Redbirds, maybe not that they don't have anything to lose, but they're playing to really surprise a lot of people. I think, you know, we've talked to Juju all season. We've talked to Coach Gillespie about it. They like being the underdog. I think they really benefited from that in Hoops in the Heartland. So now them going to the biggest stage, playing on national TV in front of what's already been announced as a sold-out stadium, a 14,000-seat building, I think they're really going to be playing with a chip on their shoulder, and they could play into that because we've seen the Redbirds have been good at slowing teams down, and the Hawkeyes play one of the fastest paced offenses in the nation. So we're going to have to see if the Redbirds can do what they did in Moline and shut down that offense, slow down, take the pace of play that they want to play, and really just put the Hawkeyes on the defensive instead by just managing the ball. But it's not going to be easy for the Redbirds because you have to shut down Caitlin Clark, but they have the defense to do it against the best teams in the Valley, and I think they're going to be playing with a lot to prove here.
And Mary Crompton, that's an interesting player. We talked with Kristen Gillespie on the interview about how she only got that one shot attempt in that last game in the MVC Championship. Do you think it's going to be just really important that the Birds try to get her open because Iowa has a prolific offense, like you've been saying, and one of the best three-point shooting teams as well? So Mary Crompton could be a huge factor tomorrow in that.
And I think she's going to be trying to prove a lot. Coming back home, coming off kind of a rough, dry spell she's had for the past 2 weeks, because really to start this season, she was one of the hottest Redbirds, and she kind of went in a cold spell lately. But now she has been in this a bit of a slump now, so I think she's going to be playing with a chip on her shoulder. She's mentioned she's got a lot of family, a lot of friends coming. Even the chance to be back playing at her high school, that had to give her, you know, some kind of confidence, go back to where things went right for her originally. I think this hometown experience could be a huge building block for her.
And I think one of the things also that might be building into this a little bit is we noticed, or at least I did when we were at the press conferences, a lot of the media attention around Mary Crompton coming back home was centered around the fact that, oh, this is a really cool homecoming for you, but, right? And it's super cool for you to be back here, but, like, for all the questions directed to Mary Crompton, it's, hey, this is super cool, you're coming back home, this is going to be awesome, but you're playing this team that's really, really good. I think a lot of people are discrediting the Redbirds, and
because they had such a good team to get in there. Like, I mean, their conference tournament run, too.
Exactly. And, like, they did hit a little bit of a falter, but they really learned from that. Coach Gillespie's been hammering that the past 2 weeks because she's been asked about it constantly, is that five-game losing streak, how has that affected you guys? And obviously any coach is going to be like, oh, we learned a lot from that.
Yeah.
But it's not just what coach is saying, but it's the way that they are reflecting it on the court. They've been locking down teams on defense very, very well, and especially after that drubbing at the hands of Drake. So
yeah.
I think that a lot of people, at least around here, are kind of discrediting the Redbirds and what they are actually bringing to the table and bringing to the court tomorrow.
And, you know, Joey, I always love a team that has a chip on your shoulder. You know, they're talking about this five-game losing streak and everything, but you have to think, they got a fuel in their fire going right now. You're going into Iowa City. You're taking on the hometown team and everything, but you also got Mary Crompton ready to prove herself, being like, yeah, I went to Illinois State and everything, but it's time for her to shine. You know, you got Juju popping off.
Mm-hmm.
We got Deanna Wilson that I think is going to pull up big in this game.
Yeah. I think, yeah, she's going to need to. Yeah, definitely.
Nick, you're absolutely right. Deanna Wilson is one of the key components for the Redbirds to have success. It's her and Kate Bowman down low, because it's a cliche line, right? You can't stop Caitlin Clark. You can only hope to contain her, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's just true, though.
Yeah.
But then the Hawkeyes also have an incredible, incredible paint presence as well. So for Deanna Wilson and Kate Bowman to be able to shut down the Hawkeyes in the paint, that really makes them one-dimensional on offense. And even though maybe their perimeter defense doesn't succeed quite as well, and they haven't really faced a team that's as good at perimeter shooting as the Hawkeyes, that still really limits their game and it makes them very one-dimensional.
And it's going to be an interesting game. We'll see what happens. But the one component of this is it's going to be live on ESPN in front of over 15,000 fans. And that's something that you come here as an ISU player maybe 4 years ago that you probably weren't expecting. And now you're in this moment, and it's just probably going to be one of their better moments of their entire lives, playing in the NCAA tournament against Caitlin Clark in Iowa in front of 15,000 fans on ESPN. That's just awesome.
And first time in 14 years, Joe.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be huge.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what Coach Gillespie touched on in the interview you just heard, where she said, you don't know if you're going to get another chance at this, so why not make the most of it? They want to go in there, not just be a team that participated in the tournament, but a team that makes some noise. I think that could be something that even if you lose the game, but lose it in a close fashion, if you give Iowa a game, that's a huge springboard for your program. You use that as recruiting. You use that.
Yeah.
You put those highlights everywhere because you show that you went into one of the toughest environments in the Midwest to play in, and you could hang in there. I think this is where we're going to find out, you know, how is this going to impact Illinois State basketball? This could be one of the best things that happened to them, is them putting their program on the map because of this game.
And when we talked to Juju Redmond at the press conference earlier this afternoon, she said something's coming. She feels very confident
right
about this game as well. And honestly, as well, she should. She's been playing out of her mind recently, and she is the offensive spark for the Redbirds. So as she goes, the Birds go. And so it's great to see her coming into this game with confidence. She is not fazed at all by the competition. She is just so ready to get out there and do what she does.
And so before we wrap up real quick, I just want to know, what's your schedule looking like for tomorrow? Because I believe Colorado Creighton tips off before your guys' game, correct? So we guys maybe possibly take a look at that game, or depends?
You know, we're probably going to probably sleep in a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
We got to get our beauty sleep in. We got to be ready.
Yep.
I think Schweizer's either going to pick us up donuts or he's going to make us a breakfast. We haven't decided on that yet.
In the kitchen.
But,
I need to know what's on the menu with Schweiz.
I'm not sure. Maybe some omelets. But no, I think we're going to – I think we're here. This is we kind of did the same thing when we were at the NCAA volleyball tournament in West Lafayette. You want to just take in every moment of the experience, because you don't know if you're going to be back at a thing like that. I mean, hopefully for us as young journalists, we hope we get to keep covering games like this, but it's a special experience, not just for the players, but for guys like us too, because it's a cool environment. Your school's there. We've been covering these players all season, so now to see it come to fruition here, I think it's just make sure we experience all we can, take tons of pictures, just really savor the moment. I think that's what we want to do tomorrow.
And definitely, that's going to be a fun game to be at. The environment's going to be rocking there. Joey, Leo, thank you guys for joining on and talk a little about what we're going to expect in tomorrow's game. So, boys, thank you for tuning in live with us here.
Well, I appreciate you guys having us. Joe, miss being there in the studio with you.
Yeah, it is kind of nice to have you guys in here. Nick's holding it down. We got Fornelli sitting on the couch.
We love what you've done with the show, too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we've changed it up a little bit.
Having a good
Every
time.
Every bump in is with Dan Muller, so that makes the show 10 times better.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, guys.
Nothing more classic than the Danny Moles bump.
Exactly. Thank you guys for coming in. And next, we're going to have, with me and Nick, talk some March Madness. A lot of stuff has gone down today, including a big upset, so...
This is going to be crazy.
It's going to be crazy. We have that coming up in just a bit. Thank you, Leo and Joey.
Hey, this is Dickie B, baby, and you're listening to The Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WCMD.
That was Dickie V. Now I'm Joe Kennedy here with Nick Levy, and March is officially here, and madness has struck as the St. Peter's Peacocks have just taken down the number 2-seeded Kentucky Wildcats in a big, big upset that broke a lot of brackets, Nick. And my goodness, a lot of people weren't expecting this, but it's March, and you see things like this happen every single year.
It's the nature of March and everything. And let me just say, it's a bad day to be a high seed today, Joe.
It is.
It's rough seeing all these big upsets happening, but you know, love that about March. It's always leaving you on the edge of your seat. You can expect the unexpected in March.
Yeah, and last year we saw Oral Roberts, a team that was seeded 14-15, and they went on to the Sweet 16, Max Amos, and then took them all the way. So today at the Kentucky game, the Oscar Sheboy, the center for Kentucky, was still doing his thing. He was putting up over 30 points, collecting down their rebounds and such. But it's the thing with St. Peter's did. They just were able to continue the shooting with Banks III, who put up 27 points in this one. He was about 50% shooting, but it was all mostly from beyond the arc. He made 5 of 8 from 3. And that's what happens in March. You have teams that can shoot the lights out for some upsets. And also, you do need a big man to try to contain someone. I mean, you can't necessarily say they contained Kentucky Sheboy with 30 points and 16 rebounds. But in the moments, I was watching it right before we were about to go live. The game literally ended right when we started the show. And the last couple of possessions of the game is where the Wildcats couldn't get the ball in the Sheboy, and a couple of, like, 3 or 4 turnovers costed them in overtime.
Big, big turnovers late in the game. And, you know, it's just a shout-out to St. Peter's. You know, you got Kentucky, one of the best basketball programs in the nation, going number 2 seed in on this. I guarantee you there's probably very little people picking St. Peter's for, like, legitimacy. Maybe
I picked Kentucky, though, to lose in the second round of Murray State.
I see Murray State being a favorite for a second round, but, you know, it's just crazy to see Kentucky go so early.
It's awesome to see, though, to be honest, because I mean, I don't mind Kentucky. I'm not like a huge Kentucky hater, but there's nothing better than March Madness. And so far today, we've had some great games that have gone down, including one that was with Michigan. That was the first game of March Madness this year inside the first round. Michigan defeated Colorado State 75-63, and it was a good game throughout. Yeah. Michigan kind of just pulled away towards the end, but a lot of controversy was struck with the Wolverines coming in with a 17-14 record, one of the worst records that's ever been in March Madness, and they didn't even get the play-in game as Indiana was put in the play-in game. It's interesting, this Michigan team.
And, you know, it's hard for me because I'm like, with the Big Ten, we're both fans of the Big Ten Conference and everything. It's just they always play with my heart, Joe.
Yeah.
Always playing with my heart. Indiana falling today. That was a hard one for me to see because they were favored to be pulling the upset. But I'm glad to see Michigan staying alive. Yeah. Even with that record, glad to see him staying alive.
Yeah, it does make the Big Ten a little boosted, especially after that terrible Indiana loss, 82-53 to St. Mary's today. A lot of people were high on the Hoosiers, maybe possibly make a little run as a 12 seed. But going back to Michigan, they just did a really good job stopping David Roddy, who was a potential All-American type player. Roddy was coming in as, I think, the Mountain West Player of the Year. And they shut him down, especially outside the perimeter, where Roddy, who shoots the ball very well because he's only 6'5 at a power forward center spot. So he's got a lot of comparisons to, like, Draymond Green, but I think more of him as a Bonzi Colson from Notre Dame a couple years back type guy. But they shut him down, and that was a big one for Michigan.
Absolutely. And also, can we talk about this Providence, South Dakota
State? That's what I was about to ask you next.
Yeah, I was just about to say is, honestly, I think they were one of the favorites for your Cinderella underdogs of this tourney coming in at a 13 seed, yet still being one of the highest scoring teams in the nation.
Yeah.
But it wasn't enough to send Providence home.
Providence, people have looked at everyone saying they're the luckiest team in the nation. They win win games by 2 to 3 points in the Big East. I mean, they're Big East champions. They're champions for a reason. They win games. At the end of the day, you win a game to win a game. Like, look at Indiana this year, too.
Absolutely.
They were a team kind of just like that, but they just lost by 30 points.
Yeah.
So completely different teams. But Al Durham for Providence, 13 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. And then their other star player, Jared Bynum, made some big free throws with 30 seconds left. And so that stopped their streak of losing an NCAA tournament for a couple of tournaments now. So the four-seeded Friars have moved on. And we were saying 70% of people were putting their money towards South Dakota State. And a big no-no.
Yeah, big no-no. And it's also, it's like, you know, a win is a win, but it was an ugly game. I'm not going to lie, Joe. Both teams, I don't even think either of them broke 40% shooting from the field. So it was just like a rough game to see that go down and everything, especially because when you have a team like South Dakota State putting up so many points per game and then they fall with just 57 points, that's a hard
one. Yeah, for the top offense.
Dude. Yeah, for a top offense, you got everyone watching you, and I think they were going on a winning streak going into this tournament and everything.
I think they won 21 straight games.
Yeah,
and they lost.
To end like that, it's a little rough.
And that's another thing that comes into March Madness. I think people value how hot a team is going into the tournament, or overvalue. I mean, it makes sense. They're on a tear right now. They've won 21 in a row, but they also, they hadn't played a game in over 10 days because they won the conference tournament 2 weeks ago. So it's like they have this momentum that's going, but then it kind of halts for a long time.
Yeah.
And then plus the buildup coming into March Madness, like there's a lot going on. But we're talking about this high-powered offense that went away. One more game let's talk about before we go into some of our Elite Eight Sweet 16 picks.
Absolutely.
Is the Iowa-Richmond game. Like, Iowa has one of – it was the best offense in the NCAA this year, but it went cold. Keegan Murray – he did well in the first half, but nothing was really put up from him in the second half. And then Jordan Bohannon, their probably number two guy and their sharpshooter, just went dead cold in the first half. No points. Did hit a couple of big threes for them in the second half to keep things close. But Iowa, what a letdown for a lot of people's brackets and just their program in general.
Absolutely. You know, Joe, I think I saw a stat that there's less than 3% perfect brackets right now.
Was that before Kentucky?
That was before Kentucky. So now
I might have saw something that was like 0.5%.
So if it's down to 0.5, you had to be lucky. I'm sorry. At that point, if you're calling both Iowa and Kentucky exiting in the first round.
Like, that's something your grandma does from a coin flip.
That's a coin flipper. Ooh, I like the logos. But who in their mind is going to be picking the Richmond Spiders over one of the best offenses in the league right now? That's a hot take to take, but if you did it, applause to you.
Yeah, so now Richmond will be taking on Providence in a matchup that could have had the two best offenses between Iowa and South Dakota State in the next round. Nope, both teams will not be making it as Richmond and Providence will meet in the round of 32. So, Nick, that's now going to get us into some of our picks we have from our bracket.
Yeah.
So, I mean, some of them have probably already dwindled away, but I want to know, let's start off with a couple of your hot takes, I would say, from teams that might not win their first round matchup or their second round, but could make a run.
Okay, so I really, really like Davidson against MSU. You know, I'm a MSU fan when I'm not supporting the Birds. Go Sparty, go Green. But Davidson this year, Michigan State being so inconsistent that I really think they have a really good chance. I know, I think we talked a little bit about Davidson as well.
Yeah, and Jelly Walker for UAB.
Yeah, so don't even give me
I know you wanted to talk about some.
Yeah, this is a whole Cinderella story pitch for you. But you got Jelly Walker, you got Trey, what's his name? The big man. You got Trey Jemison playing 7 foot. 14th in the NCAA, or that's Jolly Walker putting up 14th in the NCAA with 20.5 points a game, averaging 31 points in the CUSA tournament. And then you got Jemison, 7 foot, CUSA all defensive team, 18th in the NCAA for blocks, put up 14 points against Chattanooga. So if we see UAB pull off the win against Houston, we're seeing a potential matchup against U of I, Chattanooga. Joe, I know you're a big Illini fan, but
before we get into we're talking about the Chattanooga.
Yeah.
I for the longest time on my bracket, I did have UAB beating Houston, but Houston's head coach, Kelvin Sampson, last year they come to the Final Four and they go all the way to the Final Four. They lost a lot of star talent though this year, but for the fourth time they're back into the dance, and they got a lot of depth at the guard spot. Kyler Edwards, who transferred in from Texas Tech, has a not maybe as good of a year shooting he did last year at Texas Tech, but he does provide that experience. And I just think that Houston's defense is tough. It's a good matchup, for UAB, though. And I think that Houston's just too good on the glass and too experienced, but it's March. And like, that's a very great pick as
March,
a team as a 12 seed that could make a run.
And you look at St. Peter's right now, I'm like, if St. Peter's can pull it off against Kentucky, there's a slight
there's a bigger chance.
And then also you have to take into account, not only is UAB so dominant this year, but they got Andy Kennedy from Ole Miss as their head coach. Yeah. And so you got an experienced coach right there that could possibly bring some wisdom into this bracket. And you know, all it is, it takes that one game to start the momentum going. And when you got Jemison coming from Clemson and everything, he's got some big conference experience coming along. And if we do get to a potential Chattanooga rematch, he has put up 14 before. Jelly Walker is completely dominant right now. If we see if we see a dominant Jelly Walker, who knows? Anything's fair game in March Madness.
The UAB Dragons, I believe that's who they are. I mean, great story that would be. But another one could be Chattanooga going up against Illinois. I get a lot of hate for this. Yeah. I've been a diehard Illinois fan my whole life since day one I was born. My first memory pretty much of sports is watching the Illini play in the national championship in 2005. And so when I saw this matchup right away, I was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
I was like, Malachi Smith, David Jean Baptiste, great guards for Chattanooga. They might be the best pure scorers out there tomorrow. But with what Illinois offers with Kofi Coburn, I mean, there's no one like him in college basketball, just how big he is of a man.
Yeah.
But there is a tough matchup that he's going to have to play up against, Nick. And who's that?
I was going to say, you got the chair coming for you, buddy.
The chair is going to be swung at your head.
You got Silvio D'Souza. If the name's not ringing a bell, you might remember the broad that broke out between Kansas and Kansas State.
Yep.
And he was the player that somehow pulls out a bar stool and is like 2 seconds away, and the assistant coach pulls it away. And that's quite of an embarrassment. But you know, with coming off this year Chattanooga's having and the way he's playing, coming in at 6'9", 250, I think Kofi might have a decent size matchup to account for. Because, you know, it's U of I, but at the same time, we've been talking about how they've been playing. Either you're seeing you're seeing one of the best teams in the nation, or you're seeing a team that can't even handle Marquette and everything. So I'm really interested to see what form of U of I we're going to get.
And the Illini got some great guards with Trent Frazier, Alfonso Plummer, one of the best shooters, and then Jacob Grandison, who's been day-to-day. So that's something to monitor inside to tomorrow. But before we wrap up, let's take a look at some of our picks that we have for the Elite Eight or Sweet 16, maybe some surprises that you could see inside there from your bracket. For me, I do have Murray State, who's currently playing right now. I had them beating Kentucky in the next round, and I have them going to my Sweet 16, as well as Virginia Tech and Davidson. So a couple of higher teams, and Vermont, who's also playing right now, as teams going into the Sweet 16. So I put in a couple good upsets into my bracket.
I was going to say, I got Murray State. Iowa was probably going to be the second biggest of an upset, but, you know, we saw how that went down. I also got UCLA. I got UCLA going up against Baylor after beating USC. That's going to be a big match. But jumping a little head into the Elite Eight, if you're cool with that, unless we want to cover anything.
No, definitely.
I got UCLA beating Baylor.
Ooh,
that's a big one for me. I think we're going to potentially see a rematch.
I was going between those two, and I have Baylor winning that one, going against Purdue there, and then I have Purdue going to the Final Four. In the top left bracket, I have Gonzaga in the Elite Eight taking on the 3-seed Texas Tech, and I got Gonzaga going there. So in the left side, we got Gonzaga, Purdue in the Final Four matching up together. Then towards the right, got Illinois against Tennessee in the Elite Eight. Illinois to Arizona played each other beginning of the year with the Illini. Played them very well down to the last possession, and that was one of their probably better games, even though they lost at home. But they matched up very well in Arizona. That's probably one of their toughest matchups.
Yeah.
And then the wrap up, I got Kansas and Wisconsin meeting in the Elite Eight. So I got three Big Ten teams, and I think this is the year Big Ten can make some noise.
Yeah, you know, I love the Big Ten. I really do. But it's becoming like the Cubs for me, or the Bulls. Right when you get your hopes up in for it, something's going to happen. It always pulls a plug. But maybe, you know, with seeing this many appearances, you got Purdue, you got Wisconsin, you got Michigan. Fortunately, Iowa falls, but, like, maybe this
Indiana.
Is the year. Yeah, Indiana. But you got U of I and Purdue being so dominant this year that maybe we see a late run for the Big Ten Conference.
Yeah, I think the struggle of the Big Ten has been there the past couple of years. They haven't had a national championship since the Spartans in 2000. And last year, eight teams made it to the tournament, but only one made it to the Sweet 16, and that was the Michigan Wolverines, who always seem to end up there. And this year, very well could do it again. And we'll kind of just have to see how things wrap up between there and such. But wrapping up in the Final Four, my matchup, I got Gonzaga-Purdue, and then the Zags going on to win, and then Tennessee-Kansas with Kansas going on to win the national championship. What do you got in your Final Four?
I got Gonzaga-UCLA. I had Tennessee-Iowa, but I'm going Tennessee-Auburn. I think it comes down to the Zags and Tennessee. I think this is the year Gonzaga takes it all, you know?
That's my national championship, too, Gonzaga versus Tennessee. And I also have to Zags. Zags are the heavy favorite. But, Nick, thank you for joining us today on this show. We wrapped up a lot of sports inside the Redbird program. Then we had Coach Gillespie join us, and then Leo and Joey. And we had a great show that was planned out today and wrapped up with some March Madness action that's still going on right now as we talk. So, Nick, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe. It's been a great time being on the show. A lot of great points were brought up and everything, so really looking forward to seeing March Madness take off.
And tune in next week again at 6 o'clock at our normal time. This is the Red Zone signing off.
And other past episodes of the Red Zone again. Download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into the Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.